Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantagraph of Friday, December 5th, 2025. We turn first to page one, where the main story is about Eats of the Week, titled Wow, Goal for Barbecue Boss, Loman Rolls with Smoker Trailer and Top-Notch Wood-Fired Flavors. This story is datelined Normal. The corporate world is the main gig for local Chris Loman, but on the side, he loves to fire up his smoker trailer for some top-notch barbecue. Loman is currently the branch manager for Dynamic Controls Incorporated, an automation management company in East Peoria. He started the Normal-based business Loman's Backyard Barbecue in 2023 and has been bringing his food all over central Illinois since. Loman started at 16 making pizzas and working as a dishwasher in his hometown of Taylorville at Angelo's Pizza. But even back then, he said, he had a dream of owning his own business and a passion for food and cooking. He felt the food that he was making at home started to become better than things he could find locally. And he also studied business at Illinois State University. He wanted to have a business where he could serve people and share his talent with others. When asked what makes his business unique, Homan said, "Just our ability to cook any type of food, it doesn't matter what it is. It's not just barbecue. So it's all types of food, and also just the commitment to excellence. I try to elevate my food and try to get it to something to where when you taste this food, it's going to be something outside of the normal that you can get anywhere else. And I think that's what really separates me." Popular menu items include the pulled pork nachos, pulled pork sandwiches, smoked or fried chicken wings, smoked cobbler, which comes in various fruit flavors, brisket, smoked tacos, and more. Loman's personal favorite is Dick and Lou's famous cheese potatoes, named after his grandparents. While there is a standard menu, Loman said he can easily accommodate special requests ranging from seafood boils to Italian food. His smoker is also unusual because it's completely mobile. He does not need external hookups for electricity because everything can run on charcoal and propane tanks. He has a generator, but it's something he rarely has to use, he added. Loman brings his trailer to various pop-up and vendor events year-round and offers catering with customized pricing, too. Local events have included Illinois Game Con and the Third Sunday Market at the Interstate Center in Bloomington, as well as for Cummins Sales and Service in Normal. He also traveled to East Peoria, Taylorville, Springfield, Pike County, and other spots throughout central Illinois. He does about 20 to 30 events per year. He also enjoys giving back. He once provided 4 meals for 150 people for a local camp, donated meals to local schools, and delivered 10 full turkey dinners meals with sides to a single mother's group. He's also done events for local churches like St. Mary's in Taylorville. On Saturday, December 6th, he will be at a swim meet in Springfield, weather permitting. Barbecue takes a long time. Some people will prep that food and have it ready and then reheat it for serving. I start it if I have to wake up at midnight for an event the next day. I'll do that because I don't want to cut any corners, he said. It takes time, it takes effort, but it makes the food better. My goal is when someone hires me to do one of their events, I want it to be where after that event they say, "Wow, that event was great, and the food was great too." Just as long as it's a mention, it puts a little cherry on top, then it's really cool to be part of that. Loman credits all of his friends and family for making his dreams possible. His wife, Karina, helps out with setup, tear down, preparation, and jumping in when needed. His mom, Cindy, takes off work to help with taking orders and cashiering. He also credits dad, Mike, sister, Kaylee, and friends, Rob Cook and Jacob Schmedeke. His daughters, Autumn, 9, and Kimberly, 6, help load and unload the truck and fetch sodas for customers, and he hopes Aubrey, age 2, will follow suit someday. Loman hopes the truck will be their first jobs, and he can teach them how to run and operate a business. Really, the goal is when people hire us, we want them to be extremely happy they made that decision, and they understand when it's over that the food was top-notch. And I think that's been done because of the feedback we get from people. It really shows the effort we're putting forward is appreciated, Loman said. That feedback included a man who said he waited all year for their barbecue to come back at Illinois Game Con and bought 4 large orders of nachos. The coolest part, Loman said, is when people come see his setup of his custom-built commercial soap smoker, which was made in Whitesville, Kentucky. It is a double-barrel reverse smoker that can hold 30 pork butts at a time on 2 racks, a charcoal grill with 2 levels, and a turkey deep fryer pot that runs on propane so they can boil water, etc. And while some prep is done at home prior to an event, Loman cooks everything on site. The trailer is hooked up to his truck where he stores various coolers. The smoker has a warming box to keep food at the proper temperature, too. Loman also locally sources kiln-dried wood from Oak Brothers Tree Care and Removal in Bloomington, including oak, cherry, and apple. Removing the moisture from the wood allows for a good, clean burn that enhances flavor for a unique taste, he said. Loman has thought about the possibility of opening a brick-and-mortar restaurant, but he would still like to keep his trailer and his friends and family involved, and he said he would keep his full-time job. However, he really wants to increase the catering side of the business. Those who are interested in contacting Loman can reach out via Facebook Messenger or via email. And that email is lomansbackyardbbq@gmail.com, and he also has a Loman's Backyard Barbecue website. Our next front page story is about Congress, titled Admiral Grilled About Strike. This is an Associated Press story, datelined Washington. The Navy Admiral, who reportedly issued orders for the U.S. military to fire upon survivors of an attack on an alleged drug boat, was on Capitol Hill for a classified briefing Thursday with top congressional lawmakers overseeing national security. Joining Admiral Frank Bradley for the closed-door meeting was General Dan Kane, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The information the Pentagon is expected to provide comes at a potentially crucial moment in the unfolding congressional investigation into how Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth handled the military operation in international waters near Venezuela. There are mounting questions over whether the strike may have violated the law. Lawmakers seek a full accounting of the strikes after the Washington Post reported that Bradley, on September 2nd, ordered an attack on 2 survivors to comply with Hegseth's directive to, quote, kill everybody. Legal experts say the attack amounts to a crime if the survivors were targeted, and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle demand accountability. The briefing in secure facility at the Capitol was with congressional leaders, including the Republican chairs and ranking Democrats of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees, and separately to the GOP chairman and Democratic vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. What I saw in that room was one of the most troubling things I have seen in my time in public service, Connecticut Representative Jim Himes, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, told reporters after emerging from a briefing. You have 2 individuals in clear distress without any means of locomotion with a destroyed vessel, were killed by the United States. Lawmakers will seek answers to questions such as what orders did Hegseth give regarding the operations, and what was the reasoning for the second strike. Democrats also demand that the Trump administration release the full video of the September 2nd attack, as well as written records of the orders and any directives from Hegseth. While Republicans who control the National Security Committees have not publicly called for those documents, they pledged a thorough review. The investigation is going to be done by the numbers, said Senator Roger Wicker, Republican of Mississippi, who leads the Senate Armed Services Committee. We will find out the ground truth. President Donald Trump stood behind Hegseth as he defends his handling of the attack, but pressure is mounting on the defense secretary. Hegseth said the aftermath of an initial strike on the boat was clouded in the, quote, fog of war. He also said he did not stick around for the second strike, but that Bradley made the right call and had complete authority to do it. Also on Thursday, the Defense Department Inspector General was expected to release a partially redacted report into Hegseth's use of the Signal messaging app in March to share information about a military strike against Yemen's Houthi militants. The report found that Hegseth put U.S. personnel and their mission at risk by using Signal, according to two people familiar with the findings. The Pentagon, however, has cast the report as an exoneration of Hegseth. The scope of the investigation is unclear, but there is other documentation of the strike that could fill in what happened. Obtaining that information, though, will largely depend on action from Republican lawmakers, a potentially painful prospect for them if it puts them at odds with the president. Rhode Island Senator Jack Reed, the top Democrat on the Armed Services Committee, said he and Wicker formally requested the executive orders authorizing the operations and the complete videos from the strikes. They also seek the intelligence that identified the vessels as legitimate targets, the rules of engagement for the attack, and any criteria used to determine who was a combatant and who was a civilian. Military officials were aware that there were survivors in the water after the initial strike, but carried out the follow-on strike under the rationale that it needed to sink the vessel, according to two people familiar with the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity. What remains unclear, and what lawmakers hope to clarify in their briefing with Bradley, was who ordered the strikes and whether Hegseth was involved, one of the people said. Republican lawmakers who are close to Trump sought to defend Hegseth, standing behind the military campaign against drug cartels that the president deems narco-terrorists. More than 80 people have been killed in the series of strikes that started in September. For critics of the campaign, like Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, the pressing questions about the legality of killing survivors are a national outgrowth of a military action that was always on shaky legal ground. He said it was clear that Hegseth is responsible, even if Hegseth did not explicitly order a second attack. He may not have been in the room, but he was in the loop, Blumenthal said, and it was his order that was instrumental and foreseeably resulted in the deaths of these survivors. And our last front page story is the Cutting Board column, this time titled Hard Cider and History, a Heady Brew. The other day, I received an email from Robert Peach, and this name is spelled P-I-E-T-S-C-H, so I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He was responding to a story about Casper Brewing and the McLean County Museum of History recreating a beer from Meyer Brewing Company, formerly in Bloomington. The museum is hosting a tasting on Friday, actually, at Christmas Under the Dome. Meyer Brewing closed in 1920 due to Prohibition, but Peach's grandfather was the master brewer at the time. This last Wednesday, Peach sat down with Rochelle Gridley from the museum to share the stories his father passed on and invited me to tag along. He still hangs photos from the Meyer Brewing Company and its brewers, including historical maps showing the brewery's campus and old storefronts bearing his family's name. After Meyer shut down, his grandfather still brewed beer in his basement, making Bob the most popular kid on the block. It turns out Peach is an avid Pantograph reader, too. "Well, Bob, I may not be a master brewer, but I did learn how to make hard cider from scratch this summer. Speak easy, friends, and don't tell the feds, because just like Bob's granddad, Mad Jack's making hooch." Full confession, I had planned on writing this around Halloween, but the opportunity never presented itself. I shelved the idea so far in the back that it was practically in the freezer. But after meeting Bob, this seemed like a good opportunity. When we wrote about apple cider back in October, I already had 5 gallons of the hard stuff fermenting in my basement, if you'll recall. In September, on a whim, I spent $100 on around 120 pounds of apples from Fisher Apple Farm. My brother and I have been gathering homebrew tools for some time. We have made our own hard cider from already pressed juice, but never from the apples themselves. We had a press, glass jars called carboys, the bung stoppers, instructional books, tools, and methods of measuring specific gravity to determine alcohol by volume, ABV, and pretty much everything we needed. So, I thought. After buying the apples, I picked up Cider, Making, Using, and Enjoying Sweet and Hard Cider by Ann Prue and Lou Nichols to brush up on the science and realize how woefully underprepared I actually was. I forgot the crucial step of making big apples into small pieces safely and consistently, called milling. And then I needed bags, and I needed lots of sanitizer, and a way to transfer the pressed juice into the 5-gallon carboy. After 2 quick trips to Menards for 4 10-gallon buckets, several visits to Friartuck Beverage for specialty equipment, and an online purchase of a hand-crank apple mill, we were ready to press. The whole process of creating something with our own hands was infinitely satisfying, to be honest. It's quite cathartic mashing up 100 pounds of apples, methodically loading the hopper and cranking. And then we counted the scoops of apple pulp into nylon mesh bags, loaded them into the press, assembled the weights, carefully turned the screw, and let flow the amber liquid. Hot dog, if that fresh cider isn't tasty, though. We added a cinnamon stick and some dried orange peel for extra flavor as well. And now for the science. Fermentation is one of the oldest methods of preserving foods. This is the process that gives us everything from pickles to sourdough to cheese. At its core, fermentation involves living microorganisms like yeast, mold, or bacteria acting upon sugars, causing a chemical reaction in the absence of oxygen in whatever ingredients you have. Now, this can be dangerous. Making beers, cheeses, fermented pickles, and wines requires precise conditions to safely ferment while avoiding harmful pathogens. This is just one of the many reasons why brewmasters were held in such high regard before the advent of industrial brewing. Home brewing requires caution. Keep everything sanitized, and follow proven scientific methods. When in doubt, throw it out. You do not want to consume something that is harmful, and you certainly don't want to serve it to guests. Brewersfriend.com is a nice online resource, but I would recommend getting some books on the subject and keeping your own notes. When fermenting cider and beer, special yeast is added to a sugary solution made from a combination of fruits or grains. The yeast eats the sugar and gives off carbon dioxide gas and consumable alcohol. But the gas needs to escape the jar. Otherwise, we have a bomb. In order to allow that CO2 to escape without letting other gases into the jar, we need an airlock. There are a few different types, but we used an S-bubble style that uses the pressure from the gas to create a one-way exit. ABV, the brewer's strength, is calculated by measuring the original gravity, the amount of sugar, of the solution without yeast, and then the final gravity of the solution after the yeast has eaten all the sugar. This is measured with a tool called a hydrometer, which is suspended in the liquid. It is a sealed glass tube with a weight that will sink depending on how much sugar is in the solution and has specific markings to measure the gravity of the liquid. For our cider, the original gravity was around 1.049, which would have given us a fermented cider around 4.7% ABV, but we wanted it to be a little stronger. We used the chart in our cider book and added about a pound of sugar to get us closer to 1.060. If the yeast ate all the sugar, we would end up with a final gravity closer to 1.010 and a cider with a 6.5% ABV, which would last longer on the shelf. The brew is done fermenting when there are no more bubbles given off, meaning the yeast is dead or the sugar is all gone. And this took about 5 weeks for our batch. Once the cider was fermented, we needed to bottle or rack it into smaller containers. We bought 48 12-ounce bottles from Friar Tuck, caps, and a special tool to cap the bottles. Using a gravity siphon and keeping all the equipment sanitized, we racked the cider into all 48 bottles, being careful to leave out the sediment at the bottom of the carboy. Now, this cider could be consumed directly, but we wanted to make it bubbly. But you can't just add table sugar, cap it, and call it good. Remember, gas builds pressure and can turn each of these bottles into a time bomb. To avoid that, each bottle got a special corn sugar tablet that would allow any residual yeast to add CO2 without creating too much pressure. And this process takes about 2 weeks. To test the batch, I recommend opening one bottle slowly outside and away from your face and body. Luckily, because we followed the science, everything turned out great. The final gravity told us we were at our mark for alcohol content, the bottles did not explode, and we did not get sick from bad fermentation. This cider is nice and fizzy. It's clean and has a light golden color. But I should have added more cinnamon and orange peel, though. And here's a little sidebar to this story. Got an uncommon holiday dish? If your family or group of friends have an uncommon, odd, or even strange food or beverage that you make around the holidays, we want to hear about it for an upcoming holiday-themed edition of The Cutting Board. You can contact D. Jack Alkire by December 12, 2025, at dalkire@panagraph.com or leave a detailed message at 309-820-3275. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is titled Hope Amid Grief During the Holidays, and it is by Kent King Nobles, who is one of the pastors at First United Methodist Church and Morningstar UMC, both in Normal. And he writes, "It is the most wonderful time of the year. The holiday season can bring many blessings. It can also be hard. If you are grieving, there is no one right way. People of faith are honest. We do not pretend that loss is easy. We trust that we are held by a love that is stronger than death. After a major loss, many people imagine that if they just try hard enough, the holidays can feel normal again. But grief has its own calendar. It deserves patience and compassion. One of the kindest things you can do for yourself is to lower your expectations this year. If you are grieving, here are a few ideas that might help. 1. Let yourself feel what you feel. Tears are natural. Numbness is normal. And laughter does not mean that you are forgetting. 2. Keep plans simple. Choose the traditions that feed your soul and set aside the ones that feel overwhelming. 3. Say the name of the one you miss. Light a candle. Tell a story. Remembering is a way that love keeps breathing. 4. Talk with someone you trust. Grief can be lonely. Let someone share the load. 5. Seek help if you feel stuck or unsafe. A faith leader or counselor can offer support. 6. Notice small signs of hope. You may not feel strong, but God meets people in their weakness. 7. Find a way to give to others in a way that feels meaningful. If you know someone who is grieving, here are some ways to support them. 1. Bring up the person who has died. Most grieving people want to hear their loved one's name. 2. Offer simple, practical help. A meal, a ride, or a gentle invitation can mean more than you realize. 3. Be patient with their emotions. Grief is not linear. Give them freedom to decline invitations. 4. Keep checking in. A short message can remind them that they are not forgotten. 5. Let them set the pace. Do not ask the grieving person to take care of your needs. And 6. Pray. My prayer is that those who are grieving will feel God's nearness and that all of us will practice compassion for one another. Remember, light comes into our darkness to remind us that love is the greatest gift of all. And this story is headlined, Man Gets 10.5 Years for Meth Delivery, Dateline Bloomington. A Central Illinois man has been sentenced to 10.5 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to unlawful delivery of methamphetamine. Andrew J. McDonald, 43, appeared Monday before Judge William Yoder for a pretrial hearing. Instead, he submitted a guilty plea. Initially, McDonald, who does not have a city of residence listed in court records, was charged with unlawful possession of methamphetamine with intent to deliver and unlawful delivery of methamphetamine, both Class 1 felonies. These charges stem from a drug deal set up in May 2025, during which McDonald was accused of selling 5.61 grams of methamphetamine to a confidential police source. The controlled buy was completed outside of a grocery store in Normal, where police pursued the defendant after the deal, court records said. Although McDonald initially ran from officers, he eventually stopped, and officers found a wad of cash in his hand, including $120 from the controlled buy, court records said. In his backpack, police found 2 forms of identification linked to the defendant, as well as 5.16 grams of methamphetamine and the cell phone used to set up the drug sale, according to the probable cause statement. After he pleaded guilty to 1 count, his charges were amended and reduced, striking the amount of methamphetamine he was accused of selling and reducing the count from a Class 1 felony to a Class 2 felony. In response to the plea, Assistant State's Attorney Alexandra Williams dismissed McDonald's remaining charge and the judge imposed the sentence, for which the defendant earned a 188 days credit while in custody. And here is today's Flick Fact question. State Farm, founded in Bloomington. Beer Nuts, founded in Bloomington. Another company that was founded in Bloomington way back in 1948 is being sold this week. Can you name it? And the answer is Freedom Oil, created by the Owens family 77 years ago, growing from a neighborhood gas and convenience store into a network of 27 locations in Illinois, 4 in Bloomington Normal, and Florida, is being sold to a Chicago-based company. Mike Owens, president and third generation of the Owens family, says the sale is bittersweet, but the time was right and extends a thank you to Freedom Oil's customers, employees, and partners who helped make the business so meaningful. Thanks for this item to Bill Fecht. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part 1 of the Pantograph of Friday, December 5th, 2025. I look forward to reading part 2 with you next.